This is the Pete Radley Show podcast, episode 7. Welcome to my world. How are you?
If this is your first visit to the podcast, I'm glad you're here. If you have a chance, you can check out other episodes. Number 1 was an introduction. Number 2 featured Julia Chungalidis from Acushnet, who now works for the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. They had their first football game this past weekend with the Falcons. Number 3 was our back-to-school episode, where we shared memories of going back to school and also talked to Mrs. Guy, who was a teacher in New Bedford. Number 4 featured our former weatherman Dean DeVore, who's been busy with all the hurricanes. Number 5 was about food. We shared some of our favorite foods, and I had some recipes for you. I made pizza bombs last night. I'm sorry, meatball bombs. I made meatball bombs last night. I make my own meatballs, and then what you do is you put them in the middle of, like a Pillsbury Grand Biscuit, you know, and then you put some marinara sauce and then some mozzarella cheese, and you fold it all up, and then you coat it with a garlic butter sauce, and then you bake it in the oven for about 20 minutes. Came out good. If you would like the recipe, just let me know, and I will definitely put a link to it. Number 6 was our behind-the-scenes look at our day of covering high school football on Cape Cod. You can check out all of the previous podcasts by just putting the mouse over the podcast where it says podcast on the website. Then there's a drop-down for all 6 versions, and you can check them out. Coming up today, we have a new feature for you. It's Mr. Bradley's Book Club. I'll look at the bestseller list. We'll try to answer the question, ebook or the real thing? Which is better, or which do you prefer? And Pete's Pats pick coming up, as I'm 1-1, just like the team is. First, some TV news. Did you watch the Emmy Awards the other night? I did not. I'm really not a fan of the award shows. I will watch the CMAs or the Grammys to see the singers, but I tend to tune out the Oscars and the Tonys, and, you know, I'll read the list the next day and look at the best dressed and worst dressed and things like that. Plus, none of my shows ever win. You know, I watch NCIS and Chicago Fire, Chicago Med, and none of those shows ever win. It's always these HBO specials or A&E. But 11.4 million people watched Sunday's presentation of the Emmy Awards, roughly equivalent to last year's show. They haven't had the greatest ratings lately, and some people wonder if it's because we don't want to hear, you know, Hollywood spewing politics from the stage, or if it's just a lack of interest in the TV shows. I don't know. It was up against pro football and also the beginning of Ken Burns' lengthy documentary on the Vietnam War. I started watching that Ken Burns film. It's really well done, really well put together, but then you would expect nothing less of Ken Burns, I guess. Time for Mr. Bradley's Book Club. It's a brand new feature on the podcast. Now, I read. I read a lot. In fact, one of my children asked me how many books I think I read in a year, and I decided to keep track. So this year I'm counting, and as of last week, I'm up to number 30. 30 books since the start of the year. I'm currently reading The Fix by David Baldacci. He has become my favorite author over the years. Don't tell John Grisham. Used to be Grisham, but Grisham just stays with the books about lawyers, you know, and legal cases. Baldacci just is, I don't know, varied interests. In fact, I had David on the radio show once, and I found the tape just the other day. Here's a little bit. I want to welcome David Baldacci to the show. I am a huge fan. David, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you.
I mentioned earlier today that David Baldacci is responsible for me losing more sleep than all 4 of my children. And I think I've said that before, and you've thanked me for that, actually.
I love that. It's a great compliment. I'll take it.
When you come to an end of a chapter, you always just throw in that tease that's good enough that I've got to read one more. Is that something? Obviously, that's something you try to do, right?
It is. I love the chapter endings are important. I want people to sort of be enticed to go to the next chapter and leave something dangling out there. It's kind of like a little piece of bait that'll make the fish bite one more time and let the hook settle in. So, yeah, that is something I'm very conscious of.
How do you keep it fresh? How do you keep coming up with these ideas?
I try to write about things that I'm have a lot of interest in. Maybe I don't know a whole lot about it. Like with the military series, John Puller, I really didn't know a whole lot about the military. I'd never served, but it was a challenge for me to sort of immerse myself in that world. I went down to Fort Benning and spent time training with the Rangers and got my butt kicked from one end of the base to the other, but interviewed a lot of soldiers from privates on up and tried to understand why they do what they do and figure out how their mind works.
Now, David, take us back. How did you get started? Did you set out to be a writer?
Well, I've been wanting to be a fiction writer since I was a kid. Unfortunately, the New Yorker and Atlantic Monthly and all those places were not buying my stuff when I was 10 years old. So I went to college and law school and practiced law. But the whole time, throughout all of that, I was writing my stories and hoping one day that I would sell a few and I could call myself at least a writer, even though I wouldn't be able to support myself. And I think those years really paid off. It was an apprenticeship for me. I wrote everything you could possibly write, short stories and screenplays and novels. And it was a great, great apprenticeship for me.
Did you have it showed,
I think, that I loved doing it. I got lots of rejections, just like all writers do, but I just kept going.
Right. Did you have any formal training as far as writing?
No, I never took. I was a political science that was my major in college. So all I did in college was I read a lot of books, a lot of great books, and I wrote a lot of papers.
What would you say to someone who, they keep meaning to sit down and write that first novel? I've heard from other people that you just have to sit down and write. Just start writing.
Yeah. Well, I think that writing is one of those things that is the perfect example of Darwinism. If you're meant to be a writer, you will be a writer, because a writer who really wants to be a writer will, despite all the complexities and busyness of life, will find the time to sit down and write the pages. And if you're not meant to be a writer, you will never, even if you think you have a great story, you will never find the time to do it. I've seen that truth bear out over, lots of different cases, and I know it really to be true. And it's just an innate fire inside of you that you have the story you have to get out, and you find the 5 minutes here or 10 minutes there or writing in the middle of the night, and which is what I did and which most writers do. So that's what I would just tell people: if you got a great story and you sit down to write it, then you know you were meant to write it. And if you don't sit down to write it, then you know you weren't meant to write it.
Also, I read two great books recently: "Poppy: My Story" by David Ortiz and "Teammate" by David Ross. I found these books really interesting. I had wanted to buy both, but I saw them recently in the library. I was wandering through the new releases section. Poppy was very interesting, growing up poor in a violent community. I didn't realize all the struggles he had when he was with Minnesota. And "Teammate" told me a lot about David Ross. I didn't realize his concussions were so bad. In fact, he played for Boston twice in 2008 and 2013, and then went to the Chicago Cubs and, of course, won the World Series there. I actually tweeted David Ross. Yeah, one of my kids is like, what are you, best buddies now? I actually tweeted David Ross that I enjoyed his book, and he liked my tweet. So I guess we are best buddies now. Maybe we'll have coffee next week. The other day on Facebook, I asked, read any good books lately? One thing I discovered is that my next book will have to be Shallow Graves by Maureen Boyle. It's the story of the New Bedford highway killings, and Maureen covered it for the Standard Times. Several people said they were really enjoying that book right now. Joyce said, the ending, but it's a page turner. Victoria said, I'm also reading Shallow Graves. Very good. Maureen Boyle did an excellent job with writing and getting the facts straight. And Yvette said, I find it riveting and well-written. I knew family of three of the victims and a lot of the police and investigators involved. So, Shallow Graves by Maureen Boyle. It's definitely going to be my next book. Carol likes The Nightingale by Kristen Hanna. It's a historical fiction novel. Steve likes Civil War books. Kevin recommended Dean and Me by Jerry Lewis. Very timely. Alyssa is reading Killing Jesus. Is that in the series by Bill O'Reilly? Janice says she is rereading the classics, Little Women and To Kill a Mockingbird. Tim likes Clive Cussler. Susan likes Valiant Ambition by Nathaniel Philbrick. I interviewed him once. He was very interesting. Karen is almost done with Nora Roberts, The Obsession. Joni likes Anne Hood and The Book That Matters Most. She says that it's very clever and an original presentation. Val read Last Man Down about 9/11. She finished it in one day. Darian likes sci-fi, as he is reading Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. And my friend Lynn, she said, I read Ruthless River by Holly Fitzgerald a couple months ago. Very well written. It's the story of an Amazon adventure that goes terribly wrong and how Holly and her husband hang on to survive. She says, my new favorite book is A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles. It is beautifully written and a wonderful story about an aristocrat placed under house arrest in a hotel in Moscow during the rise of the Soviet Empire. Next up, she plans to read Salman Rushdie's Golden House. She's looking forward to it because she's never read anything before by Salman Rushdie. The other question I asked was whether or not you prefer the actual book or if you use a Kindle or iPhone. Now, I like the actual book. I like to hold it. I like to turn the pages. I always lose my bookmarker every night. But I will admit that I use my iPhone in the winter, especially if I can't get out to the library or the bookstore. I have an app on my phone. I've written a column about this before. I have an app that I actually got from the Fairhaven Library, which kind of confused me because here is a library telling me to read ebooks, but it comes in handy when you can't get out. It's an app called Hoopla, H-O-O-P-L-A. And you do have to have a library card because that's your username or password. And Hoopla gives you access to a number of books, I guess in movies too, but I've just done the books so far. I heard from some people that agree that they like books. Steve says books, always books, has to be books. Susan says she tried reading on Kindle but still prefers holding a book in her hands, and she loves the library and bookstores. Now, Mike says he likes, you know, the e-books. He says he likes carrying lots of books and newspapers and magazines with him wherever he goes on that small device. He also likes being able to adjust the font size and the brightness of the screen for his tired eyes. Janice says, I read mostly on my Kindle as I can carry literally hundreds of books with me. And Tim said he didn't think he would like it, e-books. But once he started reading on his 8-inch Galaxy tablet, he says, I loved it and rarely pick up a paper book. It's so easy to carry, keep track of my location, and if I forget my tablet, my Kindle app knows where I left off and I can read on my phone. So I guess the convenience of having a lot of books on one device and carrying it with you is nice. My friend Jim Phillips said, I am reading the Kindle version of Roosevelt. Slogging through it might be a better description. I sometimes think Roosevelt had even more issues at home than he did overseeing the war on two fronts and dealing with a finicky Congress. Kathy said she likes both. She prefers books at home, but can't beat the Kindle for traveling and being able to read while she's at the beach. Lynn has a good story. She said she had a Kindle, but it inexplicably died while I was in the middle of reading a book. I went back to paper and ink because, well, they don't die on you. And our mutual friend Bernadette said, Kindles don't smell the same as books. And this is true. Here's a quick look at this week's New York Times bestseller list. Let's count these down like Casey Kasem. At number 10. Number 10 is Glass Houses by Louise Penny. Chief Superintendent Gamache regrets not acting on a hunch when a body is discovered. I remember when I was back on the radio, this is when I would go, dun-dun-da. Number 9, Before We Were Yours by Lisa Wingate. Number 8 is Proof of Life by J.A. Jantz. Number 7, The Western Star by Craig Johnson. Number 6 is by Sue Grafton. She's up to Y now. Yeah, Y is for yesterday. A former student from an elite private school is released from prison, and a sociopath returns to haunt the detective. Isn't Sue the writer that all of her titles go A, B, C, D? She's up to Y now. 5 is Dark Legacy by Christine Fien. Emmeline Sanchez fights to recover from exchanging blood with a master vampire, even as she tries to heal the children that she saved from him. Number 4 is Stephen King. It is the collective clown phobias of 7 teenagers are rekindled in their adult lives. My son asked if we had football Sunday the other day, and my son asked a room full of about, I don't know, 6 or 7 people, if anybody wanted to go see It. Nobody raised their hands. Something about the clown phobia, huh? Number 3 is A Legacy of Spies by Jean Leclerc. He was featured on 60 Minutes last week. Peter Gilliam, formerly of the British Secret Service, is pulled out of retirement to defend intelligence operations during the Cold War that resulted in the deaths of people close to him. Number 2 is Enemy of the State by Kyle Mills. Vince Flynn's character, Mitch Rapp, leaves the CIA to go on a manhunt when the nephew of a Saudi king finances a terrorist group. And at number 1, Secrets in Death by J.D. Robb. This is actually Nora Roberts, writing under a pseudonym. Lieutenant Eve Dallas investigates the murder of a professional gossip who dabbled in blackmail. That's number 1 on the New York Times bestseller list. Oh, my wife also, she put in an order with Amazon for Tom Brady's book, TB12, or the TB12 Method. I think it's worth a read, right? Curious as to his diet and all that. All right, time for Pete's Pats pick. As predicted, they bounced back last week. I said it would be a bounce back week. They beat New Orleans by a score of 36-20. By the way, is it New Orleans or New Orleans? I usually say it, you know, I rotate how I say it, so one of them's got to be correct. Anyway, the Patriots beat the Saints 36-20 last week. This Sunday, it's a 1 o'clock home game against Houston. Even though there are lots of injuries, I don't see there being a problem this weekend. I'm going to go with the Patriots. And last week, I doubted myself. I didn't want to go with the 2 touchdowns. I went with 1. I'm going to go by 10 this week. I'm going to say New England beats Houston by 10 this week. All right, that's it for the podcast today. Thank you so much for listening, and happy reading. It seems like people do read a wide variety of books, and it seems to be 50-50 in my unofficial scientific study as to whether or not you like to read them electronically or hold the book. Again, I like to hold the book, but a number of people said they liked having a large number of books in their pocket. And I like the fact that they can take it anywhere. Remember my theory, by the way. If you have a doctor's appointment, have a book with you, or your Kindle or iPhone, have a book with you that you've always wanted to read. It's really important for you to read this book. Because in my experience, if you go into the doctor's waiting room with a plan of something to do, they'll call you right away and you won't have time to do it. Have a good week.